I've been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
Cairo. I've been there. Cairo.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life and we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
Thank you for tuning in for another episode of the Hashtag MoLedge podcast, sponsored by the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. This is Rachel Herndon Dunn, editor of the Missouri Times, here with my lovely co-host, Becky Lohman of the Catalyst Group.
Hey,
and
guys.
I know you can't see us, but we almost matched today because we're both wearing tan vest, and that's very important for everyone to know.
Representative Smith didn't get the memo.
No, and that is our guest today, Representative Cody Smith, freshman Republican from Carthage. Welcome to the Hashtag MoLedge podcast, Representative.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me. Long time listener. First time guest. Am not wearing a tan vest, but next time. I'll have to buy one.
You know, something I'm curious about. You are from the southwest corner of the state. And I know there's a few districts where it's actually closer to drive to the Gulf of Mexico than it is to Jeff City. How long is your drive?
It is 3 hours.
Okay, so that's
almost
not
exactly.
Bad.
Yeah, it's not the longest. It's not the shortest, but I'm closer to the capital than I am the Gulf. So, okay. Yeah.
Well, that's something. So, first things first, it's been kind of a crazy week in the building. What's been going on in the House?
Most of my committee assignments revolve around the budget process, budget committee, and we're working on department requests right now, and we're almost all the way through those. Today is going to actually be the last day, I think, that we'll work through department requests, and then we'll be doing budget markup next week. And so that's that. My whole, you know, existence here kind of revolves around that process. On the floor, we've debated, perfected, and third read several bills. We're functioning at a very successful high rate, and so we're moving a lot of legislation as a body.
The budget process, or budget generally speaking, is always so fascinating to me for the members that sit on that committee, right? Because as a lobbyist, I have a singular issue. I sit in a budget hearing maybe once or twice a year for an hour, and you guys are there every day. They're very long hearings. They're very detailed. I think it would be normal to kind of lose interest or hard to maintain interest over that time. So tell me kind of what that process is like, being in those long budget hearings, kind of doing a deep dive in all of these issues. I'm sure your expertise is just incomparable.
Expertise is a strong word. I'm still working on that part of it. This is my second year of my first term, so I'm certainly still very much learning the budget, and I will be learning. If I do 8 years in the House, I'll be learning until the last moment, I'm sure. But the process that we're going through right now, we're going through department requests, and we'll go through line by line those budget books, and we'll sit down with the departments and discuss what their requests are and how they compare to the governor's recommendations. And those books, the budget books, are about a 4-foot stack of books if you put them all together. And so it's
so you have it memorized then.
Yeah, you know, they're very detailed. It's a very long process. We've spent essentially almost 40 hours a week just in budget hearings these last several weeks. And so that's kind of a job in and of itself, is sitting on the committee and hearing these budget requests and trying to get a sense of the big picture, which is very, you know, is probably the most difficult part, because you can compartmentalize in the budget books to contain certain pieces of the budget, but to have a grasp on the big picture is really what very few people do well, in my opinion, and that's something to always kind of strive for. So
something I'm kind of curious about, and I'm very fortunate because I've got Ben, and Ben enjoys the budget. He covers it well, I think. At least I don't have anyone complaining. And last night he texted me and he's like, it's feral hog time.
Yeah, we had a little exchange on Twitter last night about feral hog time, and I was excited. I tweeted that I was legitimately excited, and I was, to hear the discussion that comes up when we review the Department of Corrections budget book. Part of their initiatives is to try to contain the feral hog problem in Missouri, which, if you're not aware, feral hogs are a serious threat to landowners in agricultural areas. They they multiply just at an insane amount, and they are very destructive to property. And so they literally can cause millions of dollars in property damage to farmers and property owners in rural parts of our state. And it's a problem across the South and across the Midwest. And so the Department of Conservation is tasked with trying to control this issue, and it's just a very difficult thing to do. So their approach now they've enacted a program about a year and a half ago, which basically we don't allow people to hunt feral hogs as sport anymore. Where we used to be, it used to be an open season, unlimited hunting by any means necessary, eradicate this problem. They've gone taken to an approach now where they don't allow sport hunting of feral hogs. They want to try to trap them and contain the problem that way. Their position is that hunters scatter these hogs and don't kill enough of them, and it's just not an effective way to do that. And so there's some debate as to whether or not that is a good approach. I think it's pretty clear from the information that I've seen that it is the best practice to trap these hogs and try to get them in large numbers. So the way by which they do that, they have some trapping teams that will go out and bait traps and try to catch large numbers of them in big traps. And they'll also take helicopters and fly around agricultural areas and shoot from the helicopters at hogs on the ground.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
After a long day in the Capitol, I'm like, you know what, put me in a helicopter, give me a gun. Yeah.
It's like real life action movie shooting from helicopters happens in Missouri from the Department of Conservation. That is obviously a very expensive way to do it, and it is a little bit inconsistent with their approach that people shouldn't be shooting at hogs one at a time. So there's some debate around that process. There's also some debate around what happens to those animals after they're killed. We've got a lot of people across the state that could use, you know, something to eat, and right now you cannot take a feral hog to a meat processor. And so there's some legislation that's been introduced to allow for that to happen. And so theoretically, if the department is capturing a bunch of hogs, has them slaughtered, that they could be given to people that are in need or just really want to buy them. Right. That's exactly right. So, and people probably would place, you know, a fair price on premium game such as that. So, that is an annual debate that I think last year we spent about an hour and a half on it in the middle of the night, and it was kind of a legendary budget hearing. This year I was a little disappointed. We didn't spend as much time on it, but we did revisit some of those things, and I appreciate Ben's our shared interest in that particular debate that comes up. So be looking forward to it again next year.
I feel like you can file this away as something I never thought I would know so much about, right? Like, you are a feral hog expert now.
Absolutely.
Like, the fun information that we get on these really random niche issues is always hysterical to me, right?
And
you go back
to
Carthage and talk with your buddies, you're like, let me tell you about feral hogs.
How long do you think it would take to unpack that conversation that I just had? You know, it's to explain to a person that, you know, first of all, and most people unfortunately aren't aware of exactly what the budget mm-hmm. process is. So you got to catch them up to there, then you got to catch them up to the need and
right.
the issues. And so to answer your question, no, it's very difficult to talk about those things
right.
when you go back home. But yeah, it's fascinating. And so we can go down these rabbit holes as a budget committee a lot of times, and we do. And Chairman Fitzpatrick, to his credit, has been very tolerant of these conversations, and it's very. It's an open, you know, style of committee, and I appreciate that. So,
interesting. So, speaking of Carthage, you're from. I always think it's interesting when someone's from District 1 or 163. There's 163 House districts, and you are 163.
Yeah.
And obviously, you're just as equal as the rest of them. You just have the largest number.
They save the best for last.
Exactly.
There you go.
So, how did you get into politics?
I was recruited by some friends. I've always been interested in public service and just didn't think I would ever do it at this time in my life. I sat on a couple civic boards back home and, member of local philanthropy clubs, things like that. Never thought I would get into politics at this time. I was approached by some friends. They asked me to consider it. We had an open seat at the time. My predecessor, Tom Flanagan, had termed out. And so I immediately thought, there's no way I could do that. I can't make the commitment. I got a family, got a business, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And they were pretty persistent and mentioned it to my wife, and that conversation started.
That's a good lobby move right there.
Yeah.
Go right to the wife.
Yeah.
That's where you get the real, that's where you get real traction.
Yeah. So, you know, we thought initially that there was no way that we could make this work this time in our lives, but that was something that would be worth doing if we could make it work. And so we continued that conversation and decided that there may not be a better chance to do something like this. Sometimes these seats only come open every 8 years or so, and who knows where we might be in 8 years or what we may be doing. And so we decided to go ahead and give it a shot, and everything worked out, and have arranged our lives in such a way that we can make the commitment to do it and the sacrifices that are involved. So.
I'm kind of wondering if there's going to be a budget legacy coming out of Carthage, Missouri.
Well, that would certainly be presumptive at this point to factor a Carthage legacy. I don't know who will replace me one day eventually or anything like that. But I'm interested in the budget process, and I'm still very much learning and enjoying that.
Outside of the budget, you've sponsored some bills. You've got mandatory minimums. Mm-hmm. So what is that for our listeners who might not know?
Just to give you a brief overview, mandatory minimum sentencing reform essentially would allow more flexibility at the judicial level for a certain subset of crimes, primarily focused around low-level nonviolent drug offenders. And I'm interested in criminal justice reform as a kind of policy topic for a couple reasons. I think that in Missouri, we have too many criminal codes, too many charges, too many convictions, too many people incarcerated. Our prisons are full at capacity. We're being told that we will have to build two more in the near future if we continue the rate that we're going at. And I'm also a firm believer that incarceration is not the best way to treat drug addiction. And so oftentimes these folks have what I would consider to be a healthcare problem, and they are incarcerated, and they really do become, criminals, and rates of recidivism are very high for that. And I think there's a real need for that, both from a people perspective, leads to better outcomes, lower crime, et cetera, but also from a budgetary perspective. It's a tremendous burden on the state. We spend, I think, $20,000 a year per inmate on prisoners there, and it's just comes at a tremendous cost. Both as a society and monetarily, I guess you'd say. So that's something I'm very interested in.
I have this theory that I'm developing. There are...
Well, please share it.
Yeah, I'm going to share it. So lawmakers that come out of Southwest Missouri are just like a special breed of lawmaker, in my opinion. Like, you've got, like, obviously Senator Blunt, and then you've got, like, the Lieutenant Governor. But it seems like there's a lot of policies that get, like, kind of hammered out. Like, I know Greene County has a lot of drug courts. And it seems like it gets a policy like that gets successful in Southwest Missouri, and then it grows from there. And it seems like every lawmaker I meet from Southwest Missouri is really open to trying new things. Especially, like, when it comes to corrections, because I'm thinking about, like, the Greene County Drug Court, and they've got a few other courts, I think. Mm-hmm. And I just find it really interesting, the innovation that comes out of Southwest Missouri.
Do you, and you kind of referenced something interesting, so do you find that being on the budget committee gives you a different perspective on any legislation that comes forth before the body, right? Certainly you have fiscal notes, but those sort of implications, I'm sure you connect the dots much more quickly maybe than people that haven't sat in those budget committees and really vetted out, flushed out the different department fundings and such.
Absolutely. When you sit through the budgetary process for, you know, a year or two, then you start to understand the numbers of programs that we have in place, how we pay for those. And so when folks introduce new legislation that would require more government spending, you realize immediately that because we have a balanced budget, we have to cut something else to pay for that program. And so it becomes a matter of what we prioritize. So I immediately want to ask the question, well, what do you propose that we cut to make room for your new initiative? And that's just kind of how I see the world at this time, and largely because of being on the budget committee, to your point, it's just we have to pay for all of this. There are certainly a lot of things that we already pay for, and we have to be cognizant of that as we create policy and create new programs going forward. So
you sound a lot like my husband. He's like, well, if you go buy that, that means our children can't eat. And I'm like, you know what? They're cute. They're cute. Just, they'll figure it out. They'll figure it out.
So, and you have, one of your bills has made it over to the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
What bill is that? And certainly we can discuss what any bill looks like in the Senate right now. I think people are wondering.
That is House Bill 1350, and we third read that last week. That was my first one, by the way, to be passed through the House. Thank you very much.
That's a big moment.
It was a big deal. It was a big deal, and I think the vote count was like 142-1, so that was a nice...
Oh, can I ask who the one was?
Representative Pogue was the one.
He always votes for him, doesn't he?
So that's kind of like a feather in your cap, right? Like, you sort of want that just because, you know, you don't want a unanimous vote, right?
he's very consistent, and very often he votes no. And so it was a tremendous amount of support, bipartisan support, and I was thankful for that. But the bill has to do with background check requirements on in-home health care providers. And right now there's a lack of consistency amongst in-home providers. And the current statute is written in such a way that any hit on that background check immediately disqualifies a person for employment in that field. And that means any, as in any criminal conviction of any type, no matter how minor or unrelated. And that's inconsistent as compared to other industries like in-home mental health care providers. And so what this bill does is just bring that in line with other in-home providers across the across the spectrum, and remains a little bit more stringent. So it's kind of a fix, helps out the providers in the hiring process, helps out those folks that need those jobs, and it also helps the department. It makes the process more efficient for them and eases the burden at the state level to get those applications approved. So, on its way over to the Senate.
I found it very interesting watching the House this year. They've been very proactive in filing bills that would open up employment opportunities for people. There's your bill. There's another one that would allow felons to sell alcohol and lotto tickets, I think it is. And, like, there's a bunch of business owners, and it's across the board just wanting to be able to hire people. Like, mm-hmm. It should be up to them. And so the House is putting all these innovative, proactive bills up, sending them to the Senate. And then what?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, right? We don't know what. Last week the Senate perfected the utilities bill and looked as if they were functioning on a level that gives us hope that we'll be able to send some things over and they could ultimately pass them through the Senate. This week it was a little more problematic over there, to say it nicely. But I'm kind of an eternal optimist, so I'm always thinking of kind of looking at it from the perspective of, good things are going to happen, things are going to work out over there on that side of the building, and we're going to be able to move some good legislation. So hopefully that's the case.
Well, we'll see, I guess.
I understand that's an extremely optimistic perspective.
We're of the same mind there. I'm optimistic as well. It will be... I mean, so something that I always think is interesting is we, lobbyists, journalists, we're all listening to the Senate and the House at the same time, but a lot of the time you're on the floor for those epic one-liners from, senators over there. And I forget that, both chambers aren't necessarily listening to what the other is doing necessarily. Anyway, that was kind of just an aside, but right now I think things are interesting. After this podcast, I'm probably going to go over and take a listen.
Take a listen.
It's pretty fascinating how that real-time dynamic can change things. We have people that run back and forth from the Senate to the House and vice versa, and as things are being done over there on the floor, we can do things on our side and vice versa. So that's a whole another level of strategic,
strategery,
as they say.
I always think it's very interesting whenever messages from the Senate or messages from the House come up in the respective chambers, and I think about, like, there's these pictures in the hallway of, like, the old House chamber before the Capitol burned down for the third time, and they didn't have social media, and I feel like you must feel so blessed to live and serve Missouri in a time when there's social media. You can find almost anything instantly.
You know, it is a blessing. at times it makes things a little more challenging. You know, when we live in an age when everything, including this podcast, will be recorded, you know, for the digitally until the end of time, there's permanent record of every action you take. So that's something to be aware of. But in the information age, obviously, does make things, you know, there are certain great benefits that come from it too. So
now I know Becky has five questions.
Five questions.
And I'm excited for this. Excited.
So before we did the podcast, Representative Smith told me that he has listened, and so he has an idea of what I'm, you know, what he thinks I'm going to ask. So I really tried to mix it up, so you have no idea, and I blindside you entirely.
I'm not going to try to out-level you as far as what I think you may ask me, but I do have, you know, I'm, you know, forced to ask myself those questions that you've asked people in the past. So.
Okay. Well. So you play along. You're a listener that answers the question
in
their own head.
Part of the
That's
of
fun.
The,
no,
fun?
I like that.
Practicing.
So, first question, what is your favorite band?
You know, it's really hard for me to... I'm really terrible at favorites, by the way, and I just want to make that disclaimer
off the bat.
Let's clarify, are you terrible at favorites that it's hard to choose one, or you just choose them all, like my 8-year-old son?
No, I don't choose them all, but I have some that it's really... It's like your children. I don't have more than one children, but I assume that you could never pick between, you know, two children. So I have... I have, you know, there's certain ones, and almost by genre, you know, that I have favorites. But, you know, my favorite band of all time, what I would have to say would be Tool. I'm kind of a progressive rock fan. They haven't put out an album in, like, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. So Mastodon is a pretty good replacement for them. Yeah.
That's why we play the five questions.
I kind of, yeah, that happens. But, you know, on the other side of the coin, I like Dwight. Like, I'm a big Dwight Yoakam fan. So there, it spans genres and different things like that. You know, James Taylor, those types of
that
artists.
That is pretty diverse.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to imagine you rolling into the Capitol just rocking out to some Tool before an early morning budget hearing.
Yeah.
Right? Is that
happens occasionally.
Day?
Yeah, it does. So
that's fantastic. So second question, who is your, like, a political mentor or somebody that politician that inspires you?
You know, I never met the man, but Senator Webster was an iconic figure in Jefferson City, who was from Carthage, and I am inspired by his, you know, legacy. People still talk about him in the building, and he's been out of the building for a long time, and so I don't aspire to leave such a mark, but I do appreciate it, especially when it hits home, because he was from Carthage, and I know his sons, and I know his grandchildren, and to have left a legacy like that, no one ever says a bad word about that man, and that's very impressive, to spend as much time here as he did, and so I certainly find his legacy inspiring.
Next question is kind of segues nicely. So what is an interesting fact about your hometown of Carthage? And Carthaginians.
That's correct. We are referred to as Carthaginians.
Carthaginians, okay.
There's an interesting fact. Our courthouse is a beautiful historic building. Kind of, it reminds me in ways of the Missouri Capitol. It's not quite as opulent, but it is architecturally almost, I mean, it's as impressive, just on a smaller scale. The interesting fact about that would be that it's said that that building is the second most photographed building in the state behind the arch. And so we're very proud of that, and I would invite each of you and all your listeners to come down and check it out on the historic Carthage Square. It's a beautiful place.
Is that what has the large clock?
That's right. Yep.
That's very Back to the Future-esque.
That's right. Like,
yes.
The Save the Clock Tower.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely
exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I've made a few trips to Carthage, and the food there is fantastic. Good coffee, and I think I had a good burger.
Yeah.
Fried avocado. That's what you need to go get
go.
In Carthage.
That's right. That's right.
Everybody needs to go do that.
You heard it here first.
Fried
it's
avocado. It's delicious.
Delicious.
It's delicious. And then you're like, oh, it's avocado. This isn't bad for me. And then you get to eat a ton. It's fantastic.
That's right.
This was fun.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's
got
really good.
A lot of great local shops there on the square, and great art
scene in Carthage.
Absolutely. We've got, you know, it's unique. We've got some local artists that are nationally renowned. For whatever reason, we've got several. We've got more than our fair share. And we've got a really nice art gallery down there that has some original paintings from some of those folks. And we have, it's literally a tourist attraction. We're on historic Route 66, and you'll see gangs of Europeans roaming around the square at times. And it's funny that they want to do the historic Route 66 tour, and they'll go and rent Harley Davidson motorcycles and buy like head to toe leather motorcycle
chaps. This is what Americans wear.
Yes. And so you'll see like German motorcycle gangs circling the square, and they'll stop and they'll have coffee, and it's a delightful experience, and we love to have them, but it's just so unique. You don't expect to see that.
You know, I'm going to start a bucket list, and I'm going to put that on the bucket
so
list.
So the have restaurant
coffee with Germans dressed in Harley Davidson.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
The restaurant that has the fried avocado also has the art gallery. And so after I had delicious fried avocado, I walked out, did some art, viewing, I guess you would call it. And then some paintings in there were like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Really?
So then I got nervous and I was like, I'm, clumsy by nature. This is not going to go well for me. So question 4, who wins in a cage match? Dan Houks, your freshman colleague, Representative Dan Houks.
Love Dan.
Or Representative Sean Rhodes.
Sean Rose, oh my goodness, that's a difficult choice because they're friends.
Yes, that's why I did this.
They are, I see what you did there.
Yes.
I'm going to say that you would give the immediate edge to Sean because of his law enforcement background.
And he's been
trained in the arts of hand-to-hand combat, I'm sure. I wonder if his cardio would be as good as Dan's, though. Dan's, probably would have a little more gas, so to speak. But in the end, I guess I'd have to give the nod to Sean simply because of the technique.
You don't want him to kill your
technique.
Bills and rules.
Well, that too, although Dan is the vice chair of the rules,
right?
So it's there's no good choice there,
Becky.
I put
you in quite a predicament here.
Thank you for that, by the way.
I know, I apologize.
Yeah, but no, I guess Sean would win the day at the end. Sorry, Dan. Love you.
Okay, last question. Who won the week?
I would have to say Representative Elijah Haar, having traveled to Washington, D.C. and met the president. I briefly spoke with him about, got the debriefing on that trip, and it sounds like he had a fantastic time. And we were also very proud of him to have him there and representing us as a body and as a state. And I know he does a fantastic job doing that. And I think it's pretty clear that he won the week because of that. So.
Another Southwest Missourian innovator.
Absolutely.
There you go.
I'm going to start hammering out my theory.
The gentleman from Green.
I think it's solid.
Yeah, I think it is solid. I mean, the names on that list are top notch.
I could probably add some, fuel to that fire. Help you hammer out that theory and form it into shape. I think you're onto something.
After this, we're going to write a book, The Innovators of Southwest Missouri.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's going to be good. And I'm really happy to announce, well, actually, I do have an announcement that I forgot about. Missouri Times is going to start sending the Capitol calendar today. So if you haven't signed up for that, you should probably email me. If you haven't sent me your events, you should probably send those to me. But my real announcement is Ben is about to be so happy with me because this is the first time we are about to finish the hashtag MoLedge podcast sponsored by the St. Louis Regional Chamber on the dot.
And Ben's so not here, so and what does that tell you?
I don't know because he's going to have to edit it.
Logically, it follows that Ben might be the problem. And he's not here to defend himself, so let's go with that.
Well, Representative, thank you so much for joining us, and I look forward to continuing our Southwest Missourian innovator conversation.
Same here. Thanks for having me.